So the reality is that the best content comes through unique perspectives of how we experience life. And then we right. document that to the world. Essentially, instead of watching movies, you make your life the movie. And if it's exciting enough, you'll have millions of people tuning in to watch it, right? But the thing is most people are sat behind their desks in this day and age, and they never get out and do cool shit. So is it a surprise that they're all basically trying to write LinkedIn carousels and ChatGPT prompts? Because they've got nothing better to write about compared to the guy or the girl who goes out there, risks everything, builds a business in public, and shares the unique perspectives.
Bonanza Growth Podcast, innovation, strategy, and UX for SaaS. Bonanza Studios is a growth consultancy for SaaS and fintech startups. Every SaaS business needs to fight in three different battles. First, product market fit, discovering a growing marketing and designing a compelling and undeniable solution to meet that demand. Second, product-led growth, turning your product into a growth vehicle by leveraging outcome-driven UX design. And third, creative marketing and organic brand building. If you're looking for a reliable partner to drive growth, check out our website at bonanza-studios.com.
Nigel, thanks a lot. Finally, it's happening. How's it going?
Yeah, it's a beautiful Friday morning here in Austin, and the sun is shining, and I'm in a good mood today. So thank you for bringing me on, and I'm really excited to speak to you, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's my job, to find folks that, you know, does something differently on LinkedIn, because, you know, that's where I hang out.
Mm-hmm. It's not Twitter. Yeah, we're LinkedIn friends. Now we've actually met.
Exactly. And I'm very curious about your practice, and I read your website, well, landing homepage, a couple of times.
Yeah, we need to update that.
And and then, so your approach is interesting, and I would like to sort of like get right into it. But before, maybe like for folks, just walk us through your background, how you ended up here, what are you doing?
Yeah, sure. So, look, I am not one of these entrepreneurs who sold sweets at school. You know, I didn't do any of that. Actually, when I was at school, man, I got bullied a lot, if I'm being honest. So I see my backstory as more of an underdog and, you know, having to prove myself to the world. I'll give you some context. So I've got a skin condition called eczema. You know it, right? And at school, I don't know what it's like these days, but when we used to play sports, all the guys, we all used to have to shower together, right?
Yeah.
So I vividly remember standing there. You probably didn't think the podcast was going here. Fully naked with wounds and scars all over my body because my skin was really aggressively bad. And the kids used to tell me how ugly I was, how I'd never amount to anything. And they used to label me Krusty the Clown. And I've never felt so vulnerable and humiliated in my entire life. But deep down, I knew there was a fire raging inside of me and I had so much to prove to the world. And it was only 10 years on when I would find myself in a big corporation, keeping myself to myself. It was a big construction consultancy called Acom. I was a cost manager at 26 years old. And I was just hiding away. But the problem was, the fire was getting stronger and stronger, to the point where on one walk home from work, I said, enough is enough. And I took a chance on myself. I started my own business. And this was a marketing agency. And this was helping, you know, e-commerce brands with Facebook ads. But that was the first time I made a decision, you know, to bank and bet on myself. And it felt so goddamn good. So, you know, one thing led to another. There were 3 years there of twists and turns and so many failures along the way. And I wound up at 2021 in Alpha Inbound, a marketing agency that helped direct-to-consumer brands grow faster with paid advertising. And at the time, they're doing about $5,000 a month in revenue. And I said to the founder, I made him a promise. I said, look, I'm going to get this agency to $100,000 a month in revenue. Don't know exactly how I'm going to do it. Remember, no reputation or anything at the time. I just know I am not going to stop until I've got the job done, using that underdog mentality. So 2 years on, in September 2023, we've just actually blasted through that target. We'll probably do about 130,000, 140,000 this month. And yeah, it actually feels good. And there is another actual twist to this story and an update, because I've actually been struggling a lot mentally recently. And I'm actually going to do something else. I'm actually going to leave the agency. Wow. So I've handed in my resignation recently, and I've got a bigger purpose now in life. So maybe we can get to that at the end of the episode. But like I said, you know, I've always used business and entrepreneurship as a way to express myself to the world, because I never had the chance to do that. And, you know, I'm 32 years old now. I feel like I'm making up for lost time. But, and I don't know if I'm allowed to swear in this podcast, but I fucking love entrepreneurship, man. I love the people I meet. I love the businesses I work with. I love the fact that no one caps my potential. I can work as many hours as I want. And there's, as we were talking about before we got started, there's no ceiling on this. There's no ceiling. You can just keep building, and there's opportunities when you understand it and you see the world that way. There's opportunities everywhere. So I did tell you, I do have a habit of talking too much, so you're going to need to cut me off. So I think now will be a good time to interject. But that's a little bit about my backstory. By the way, Nigel Thomas, if anyone didn't know.
Well, that was the fieriest intro to any podcast I ever witnessed.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I've recorded a bunch, like about 60 episodes. So I think this was hands down the most honest, brutally sharp intro. So well done for that. And I really appreciate that you shared your personal story. And I think it touched me to the point that I could not talk, and I really wanted to hear the end of it. But I feel like every entrepreneur sort of generalization, but I mean, touching upon my own story, I think every entrepreneur has dealt with some level of trauma or challenges in their childhood or in their upbringing, and that allowed them to basically grow a fire in their stomach that keeps them moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Most entrepreneurs and people who are really successful in business are actually very insecure. But they turn that insecurity, and I know, I understand it's sometimes not good to always harness dark energy, but they turn that security into, you know, great businesses, hiring great people, and then they change the world. And what an amazing way to transfer that energy.
So entrepreneurship, and the way you said it, I capture my interest. It seems like it's a vehicle for you to express yourself. So yes. Basically a creative expression exercise. How does that affect your daily work, daily routine, like knowing that you're getting up, there is things to be done? How does your day-to-day look like?
Yeah, I've done lots of routines. So me personally, I definitely believe in the fundamentals. And if you do the basics right for a long period of time, you'll have success. So I'll, you know, with LinkedIn, for example, we can get into that, but that's how I built that. I never thought that I was a creative person. I knew one hill I could die on was brutal consistency. And that start, I'm a big believer of how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Yeah, so 100%.
If I'm doing an interview and someone doesn't show up to the meeting on time, for example,
no go.
I know that they're not organized, the person. When I ask someone a question, I will, a lot of the time, I'll say things like you just asked me, what does your day look like? Tell me from start to finish your day. And it's not about exactly what they say, it's how they say it, how they deliver in it. Is it consistency? Is it, I get up at 6 a.m., I go out and get some sunshine, well, depending where you live, I go to the gym, by 7 a.m., I have my coffee, I sit down, I do, you know, an X, Y, and Z. because now they've got structure in how they think, and it means that's how they approach work. So I've just moved to Austin. So my schedule, you know, if I'm being honest, is a little bit all over the place right now. But what I tend to do is, you know, I get up in the morning and I'll usually get straight into the LinkedIn stuff.
Yes.
And I say, get that out of the way, because that probably takes, like, you know, you've got to engage with the community. You know, you've got to, say, pay rent, so to speak, but you've got to show up. You've got to be there for the community. And once that's done, I go straight into a deep work block and I try and crack out. And how I organize my schedule is I do things with the highest leverage. So for me right now, writing is the highest leverage activity that I can do, because, you know, just to break that down for people, if two people are writing a LinkedIn post, one person writes it and it goes out to 10 people, but then person A writes it and it goes out to 1 million people, that's the same amount of input, but it's exponentially different, like massively different amount of output. And that's what leverage is. And as you gain an audience, you know, whatever medium you're using, instead of me, for example, being on sales calls or, you know, trying to send out cold emails, I've now got the ability to write and impact a lot more people. So that's a really high leverage activity. And I try to do that when my creative juices are higher earlier in the day. And then obviously as the day goes on, I do more and more admin tasks. But yeah, it's, you know, I'm working on it. I do actually, I'm fortunate enough now to have an assistant, so that definitely helps out. But yeah, you know, look, I run a marketing agency. I'm CEO of a marketing agency, so we have fires to put out all the time, just as any other business. So, you know, I would tell you it's all sunshine and rainbows, but it's not a reality.
You drop a lot of like key secrets to entrepreneurship. First of all, leverage. I think that's really important. Like, to your point, one time I was invited to a conference in Berlin for 2 days, free ticket, come here. And then I did a calculation. I was like, okay, 2 days, let's say 8 hours, I'm going to be there. Half, I have to attend to some calls, meeting, da, da, da. So I'm going to be away from my desk, my cave, for 16 hours of productive hours. If I would have only put aside 3 hours out of that 16 hours and would write a couple of quality content on LinkedIn, I could capture 10,000, 100,000 eyeballs. So which one is more effective for my business, for my career? And I said no to the conference.
Yeah. Although, and now I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
So if we draw back what makes really good content and why most people, in my opinion at least, don't write good content.
Please.
Is because so the reality is that the best content comes through unique perspectives of how we experience life, and then we document that to the world. Essentially, instead of watching movies, you make your life the movie. And if it's exciting enough, you'll have millions of people tuning in to watch it, right? But the thing is most people are sat behind their desks in this day and age, and they never get out and do cool shit. So is it a surprise that they're all basically trying to write LinkedIn carousels and ChatGPT prompts? Because they've got nothing better to write about compared to the guy or the girl who goes out there, risks everything, builds a business in public and shares the unique perspectives. And if they go to, for example, a conference, they might have one conversation with an exceptional person that they've never met before that completely rewires their perspective on everything. And suddenly everything becomes clear. And now, you know, their whole business model might change or something. So I think it is also important to, and this is honestly, I'm talking to myself here because I'm the guy who says no to all the conferences and stays inside. But once, you know, I've had a few people in my life where I had one conversation and it changed my entire perspective on business and life. So mm-hmm. I do think it is also important to get out there and then, you know, ideally document those experiences. Do cool shit, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. Be the basically hero of your own movie. Don't watch other people's movies.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So building a business out in the public, you have a really strong LinkedIn presence. One might say you're killing it over there. How does your LinkedIn activities feed your business, if you want to break it down for the audience?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, you know, the immediate one is sales, as people gather. You know, it's really helped. Honestly, this year, it's pretty much been our entire pipeline to the point where that's a bit risky, really. So it's been great for business development.
Yeah.
But the thing is that most people don't think about this, which is most people won't do business with you, but they can impact business. So I have this thing called the sphere of influence. For context, we work with in our ecosystem of ICP, we work predominantly with Shopify brands, skincare and supplement, and they're doing anywhere between 5 and 50 million. There's about 9,000 companies. So if I was just to write content for 9,000 companies, and ideally we want to get to the decision maker, the founder, or the VP of marketing, there wouldn't be that many people to write content for. So I started drawing it back. And I was like, when they make a decision to work with a performance marketing agency like Alpha Inbound, what is a decision-making process they go through? Well, they ask questions to what I call the sphere of influence. They'll speak to people in a team. They'll speak to the different SaaS providers they work with for, you know, the other activities in their business. They'll obviously go and do their research. They will, you know, ask their friends who are probably other founders of e-commerce businesses. Now, imagine this. When they go through that decision-making process and they ask those people those questions, every single time, the same answer comes back. Nigel Thomas at Alpha Inbound, Nigel Thomas at Alpha Inbound, Nigel Thomas at Alpha Inbound, Nigel Thomas at Alpha Inbound.
That's right.
The key of really good content is to become the solution even before your ideal customer has the problem. And the way to do that is to basically plant a seed in the mind of everyone in their sphere of influence. So when people see me writing content that isn't necessarily specifically for the founders, I'm doing that on purpose. Because guess what? When I rock up to events, lots of people have seen my content and now it's a warm conversation and you've already got a heightened level of awareness. And then you can do activities such as cold outbound sales. You know, you can go to events to meet people and you already have a level of awareness. A great example, the other day, the CEO of Mudwater, it's a huge direct-to-consumer brand that venture-backed, reached out to me. His name's Shane. He's a really good guy. And little known to me, he was like, I've been following your content, your journey for 6 to 12 months. And what was also very interesting is the posts that you referenced weren't anything to do with business. They were actually to do with, you know, me getting heartbroken and talking about my vulnerability. And guess what? That shows you how humans communicate. We communicate through stories. So even though you might not be talking about the best case study of how you've helped your client out, if you share a really personal story, you'll connect with that person. So you'll always stay top of mind. And then when it comes to business, as you know, D2C, B2B, it's all people to people. And that's 100%. What people forget.
100%. Like, you know, it's something that folks don't understand, and I want to be a bit more vocal about this. Founder-led marketing is for real. It's happening and making businesses like yours grow. Why, essentially, if I want to add to what you said, is a CEO, a CMO of a growing direct-to-consumer business, SaaS business, essentially wants to work with someone that they can trust and they can rely on, basically hand over their business to them, right? So essentially, not only expertise matter, but whether I can work with this person, whether I can connect to this person on a deep level. So when you put your heart out there on LinkedIn, Twitter, Meta, whatever, and people can see your vulnerabilities, can see your dark side as well as your good side, can really relate to your story, then it's subconsciously they are making, going through this decision-making process, hey, I can actually work with this person because I can connect to their stories. And essentially, these folks at such level of intensity that they are running their business, they want to establish a close connection with folks like me and Nigel. That's the secret of founder-led marketing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And yeah, in a world where AI is becoming more and more prevalent, technology is advancing faster than ever, the best way to stand out is to just be more human.
Uh-huh. Wow. Okay. Can you please repeat again?
Yeah. So in a world where everyone's talking about AI, technology is advancing faster than ever.
Right.
The best way to stand out is to just be more human.
100%.
And actually, now that's this is transitions well into probably, in my opinion, the most important part of content and what it can do for your business. So as we talked about, connecting with other humans, you know, that level of awareness. But let's think about the real problems of business and really what defines an incredible business and what gives you success, you know, between the small ones, the ones that go massive. It's the people, right? The people who are inside working for your business. Recruitment, massive issue. We all know that. When you need to find that person, you're doing it all last minute. You're trying to use recruiters. Again, I love a lot of recruiters out there, but most of them suck. No offense. And that's just because you'll never, you know, look, at the end of the day, no one's ever going to care about your business as much as you are. Now,
yep.
With content, all of a sudden, you're building a massive audience, not just the people you can work with in terms of business, clients, potential, you know, team members. And by the way, I never thought about this until it happened. So our operations manager could have worked for a Fortune 500 company, incredibly talented with tons of experience. And when I posted the job, you know, we advertised for the operations manager role, he came to me. And he'd been reading my content for 6 or so months. And the reason why he wanted to work at Little Old Alpha Inbound is because he believed in my mission. He believed in my principles as a person. So the content acts as a filter to attract people in line with your principles and values as a person, which, guess what? That's what your culture is. So now you're bringing in people who are already aligned with your culture, which, let's extrapolate that out, means now you have a massive team of people that have all been attracted to you because of the content you're putting out. And you have a team of A players who all think the same. They all believe in the same things. And guess what? They create a massive, successful business together. And that, in my opinion, is probably the most powerful part of putting content out there that most people don't talk about.
Nigel, before starting Bonanza, I thought that big companies can hire anyone by putting forward a very lucrative offer. That was my belief, because essentially before Bonanza, I was in the startup world and we were scaling startups, and we would see that anyone that we wanted to hire, they would say initially yes to us, but at the end they would say no to us because they got a better offer. But when I started Bonanza, then I discovered something really interesting, to your point, that some folks, especially talented folks, money is a criteria for them.
Mm-hmm.
But some prefer to get paid less, but join a team that they can identify themselves with their culture, with their values, whatever. And yeah. That was a very big aha moment for me.
Yeah, the same. And the thing is long the real talent, the real A players, especially with entrepreneurial flair, they know that they see, like, they think long term, and they know that if they come in early at this company, one, they might be able to get equity, but they see the long term potential of the vision, and they know that they can then be, you know, number five in a massive company in 5 to 10 years' time, as opposed to, you know, I don't know, the 1,050th employee.
Or learn the secrets of growing businesses. They get out and do it for themselves, like the way you did.
Yep, 100%. And you know what? A lot of founders have issues with that. But at the end of the day, if you try and stop someone, in my last agency, actually, I didn't talk about this, but I basically built a real estate marketing agency, a lead gen agency, and the owner was doing he had some other businesses. So I basically built this business from the ground up. We had a team of 20 people. We were growing pretty fast at the time. And I built pretty much the whole thing from scratch myself. There was people who helped out. And I was really the leader of this company. And then the other guy's businesses fizzled out for whatever reason. You know, it was COVID. Anyway, he came back in, and from an ego standpoint, he couldn't take the fact that I was the leader. And that's where, and I still remember this line that he said to me. He basically said, I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, because it really got to me. And it was something along the lines of, you know, some people who are intrapreneurs and entrepreneurs, and though if you try and go out there on your own, you will fail. And he gave me all these examples of people that he'd specifically picked that had been a COO at a business, because that was my official title, gone out there and failed. And what he was trying to do, he's a narcissist. He was trying to manipulate me, to scare me, to stop building this company the way I was, and make sure that I would always stay with him. And I just hated it. Everything with me was just so wrong. And the problem is, if you try and get in the way of real entrepreneurs, you will get steamrolled, because they're problem solvers. They are born problem solvers, so they're going to figure out a way. And if you support them, it can be something amazing. But if you try and get in their way, it's something that I really believe in, man, because there's so many people that try and manipulate people to stay with them. And long term, it never works out. And I watched basically as this guy tore apart the company that I built from the ground up.
100%.
And made the company so toxic. Everyone left. People lost their jobs. And obviously for me, you know, I saw the other side and saw what a toxic culture is like. So there's some great lessons there, and I'm grateful for that. But, you know, that is another thing, a real issue in business, when egos get involved like that and you try and control and shape people. Like, accept people for who they are and empower them to become and grow into, you know, great people.
He just basically fueled your furnace to get out there and do your own thing and prove him wrong.
And that's why I went to Alpha Inbound, and why I had, you know, why I said to that founder and the person that I worked with, he was very introverted and he wasn't really interested about being the face of the business. So that worked well for me. But really, man, it was the reason I joined Alpha Inbound is a redemption story for myself, you know, and then obviously I built my personal brand off the back of that. And obviously that built this guy's business. So it worked, you know, well for both of us. But he never got in the way of me, and he really supported me with that. And I saw the change, and I'll be forever grateful. I'll always help that guy out.
So you have such an amazing track record from the previous company or agency. So correct me if I'm wrong, within 2 years and a half, you took it from a 5,000 ARR
a month
to 100,000 a month.
Yeah, so it's about 130 now, but yeah.
I'm curious to learn what kind of lesson you picked up scaling a business to such level of, it's fantastic, by the way. I mean, folks, if you don't understand, like, growing an agency is really difficult. It's not a SaaS product. It's not a, you know, direct to consumer, you know, business, it's difficult, like by nature. So what kind of learning you picked up along the way?
Yes, honestly, so many. And I learned a lot of lessons the hard way, man. Yeah. By the way, just for anyone who isn't in the agency world and you're earlier on your journey, an agency is a fantastic building block. And here's the reason why. As well as getting yourself stuck into all the different life cycles of business, you basically are going into the back end.
Yes.
Of hundreds of companies simultaneously. You like, there's not many places where you get that much education that fast. And 100%. You basically just soak up the knowledge. And again, you're problem solving for all of these guys. So right now, over the last 5 to 6 years, I've probably talked to about 1,000 founders, like in e-commerce, and direct to consumer. So I understand. I mean, look, there's people that are definitely better than me out there, but I have a pretty good understanding of how these businesses work. And it was just because I soaked up all the knowledge. But in terms of lessons, I mean, one of the big ones is that I waited way too long to hire A players. So,
That's a big one.
Yeah, I was trying to get C players and B players to do A player roles just through brute force. And then we hired someone with 5 times the salary, but the output is night and day. It's not like, because now I've got my time back. So this person's taken a lot of the day-to-day operations. And that was one of the real big moving points. Another thing is we actually work with this amazing woman called Rachel Jacobs, who she is the best operator in the agency space in the direct-to-consumer side. She works with agencies of all shapes and sizes. And honestly, if you ever get a chance to meet her, she's got the biggest heart. Like, she just really cares. She's an amazing entrepreneur. But anyway, she basically came into the business acting as a fractional COO. And the first thing she said is, look, Nigel, if you want to scale, you've got to productize. And we were doing things. We were doing some things to some people. We were doing some things to someone else. And it was like, you need to productize your service and you need to systemize it. And then you can scale it. So we didn't actually scale for a while when she came on. We actually took a step back and then we built all the systems and mapped out that customer journey from A to Z and productized the whole service. And when I say maybe it has a negative connotation, because that doesn't mean copy and paste productize.
Right.
It means being operationally efficient to the point where you know what you have to do, what, you know, levers you have to pull as a business to get the client's results. And that's what the clients want anyway. Because then when you get onto a discovery or a sales call, you can say, this is the roadmap. We're the experts. You come and work with us. This is a roadmap for 6 months. At month one, this happens. At month three, this happens. At month six, this happens. And guess what? We're doing it for 20 brands that are in your exact market because we've niched down into supplement and skincare. That gives us massive operational efficiency. And for an agency that's, you know, of a similar size that are trying to do all markets at the same time, they can't compete because we have operational efficiency over them. So obviously our profit margins are better, but also we can deliver a better service and faster. So productizing the service was definitely a massive one. And right at the start, this is another key lesson I had. So when at the start, I didn't have a LinkedIn presence, right? That was only a year in. So we built it all through cold email. That's what I knew from, you know, my background in sales. Right. And what I did is I got on calls with some of the biggest agencies in the space, and a little bit sneaky, but I was essentially acting as a brand. I had my camera off, I had a fake name, whatever else. And the reason I did this is I wanted to understand their sales process and their business, and I wanted to see where the gaps were.
Oh, that's
right. And from that, I essentially saw that most of them don't do much due diligence up front. So when I built out the sales process for our business, I made sure that we had one of the best discovery and due diligence processes in the marketplace which we still do today. And that's why a lot of brands have come and worked with us. And that's how, even though we had no reputation, we could take people from a cold email to them trusting our service, because the work we did up front before we ever charged them a penny,
right,
we showed them so much care and showed them a level of strategy and mindset that they'd never seen before.
Mm.
And, well, not until they'd started working with these people, but actually most of them never even had that when they were working with them. And I also made sure that we were brutally honest with people. And that was probably the biggest thing. So my big thing, man, is, look, I understand all the sales tactics. I get all of that stuff. But what most people don't talk about, if you can manipulate someone into a sale, is long term, if it fails, you lose their trust and respect.
Yes.
You only get one reputation. So for me, look, I'd rather be honest with someone and win their trust and respect, because I can't tell you how many times I went into a call and I ripped apart his business, whatever, you know, asked the questions. And I said to them, look, I'm going to be honest. If you work with a marketing agency right now, you're going to run your business into the ground. Instead of doing that, fix this, this, and this, and then come and have a conversation with me. And often, I've had it quite a few times where they'll email me after the call and just say, Nigel, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you giving me that honest advice. No one in this marketplace is doing that. And I just respect that so much.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like, that person will obviously remember me. And even if they don't work with me, they'll refer me a piece of business.
100%.
And it's just a long-term gain. So doing really good due diligence, if you want to win some market share, is definitely a way to develop relationships, but then also being honest on the back of it. Man, I've got so many lessons.
Yeah, my I'm hearing. So if you want to go, let's go.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's obviously some that are more prevalent to our space and industry, which is the fact that, you know, the barrier to entry in our space is literally just a Wi-Fi connection and a laptop. You don't really need much cash compared to a SaaS company to start an agency. So that basically means that with the rise of the internet, a lot of people have flooded into the marketplace. And one of the biggest things that I realized, man, is that a lot of these guys and girls that are coming in, and look, I know it's generalist, they take a course or they watch YouTube videos and they start business. They start figuring out the first problem in business that they need to solve, which is marketing. So they're just thinking about marketing and they're just understanding about marketing inside the back end of the Facebook ad manager or whatever. But the thing is that they then lack business knowledge. So here, let me just give an example. If we run Facebook ads for a client and we explode the growth of their business, if they can't keep up with that demand from the supply side, we're going to run their business into the ground. So now I actually need knowledge of how supply chain works, and I need to understand leading times, and I need to ask the questions to the business owners of, this is your hero product. How much stock have you got? If we run out of stock of this product, how long does it take it to get back into product? How fast can we scale? And now, actually, we might not scale as hard on purpose because we want to do it in line with their stock levels. Because guess what? When the customer comes to the store and there's no product there, they don't know anything about the supply chain. And now they've got a bad first impression. So now you're not building a brand. And when I have conversations with these guys, and I talk about those kind of things, asking them about supply chain and profit margins, and are you in retail, and how's your company structure, what are your margins? They're just like, wow, no other agency's ever asked me those questions. And that's because I'm a business guy. I think about everything else in the ecosystem.
100%.
And I think that's something that a lot of entrepreneurs need to understand, that really, if you want to be successful in business, you need to understand the whole life cycle.
And 100%.
The real A players are the ones that can see not only micro, but they can see macro. And that's what real leaders are. They understand with a split decision, not only the micro impact of why we're solving that problem, they understand the macro impact of how it impacts all departments and the wider vision of the company. And that's why those people get paid a lot of money.
Yeah, essentially why you are getting paid a lot is because you can make really effective judgment about really hard problems that the business face, and they look for a solution or remedy in a short amount of time. And a lot of folks don't understand, people like you get paid a lot, not because they can do ads really well, because they have this system thinking approach to scaling a business.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the big brands, and actually, this is another lesson. The big brands, and this is the way I'll coin it, they don't pay you for clicking buttons.
No.
The big brands pay you for moving pieces forward on the chessboard.
Yep. And they don't care about how much they're paying you, as long as you can deliver results. That's exactly. another point that folks don't understand. And a lot of agencies, to your point, I mean, I wanted to be like a silent and not say, because you were dropping gold one after another, is that a lot of businesses, not agencies, they're in zero-sum game. They want to take something. Mm-hmm. They want to gain something in the short term. But real businesses, they are in positive-sum game. They're looking at the long term. And to your point, you said really nicely about due diligence. We're looking for partners. We look at our clients as partners. We want to partner with them, because if they grow, we grow.
Yeah, 100%. And we make, for us, we make most of our margin when we scale the business. So
100%.
It would be in our best interest to only work with people that we think we can be with long term, because another massive issue in our industry is that there's lots of agencies that have great sales teams, but the problem is they don't have communication between the sales team and the fulfillment team. So what ends up happening is they sell people that they can never get results with. And not only does that make you really operationally inefficient, which is going to destroy the margins in your business, also it makes the team really unhappy.
Yep.
And if you have an unhappy team, the work will never be good.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Oof, that's... Wow, okay. I want to just switch back, because I want to get your thoughts on the world of direct-to-consumer, the world of marketing today.
Yeah.
And for the next 10, 15 minutes, because I think you could provide a lot of value to our audience too. I want to start with your basically statement on your website, which caught my interest and I looked at it a couple of times. So you start with, if you go to Alpha Inbound website, the title reads, "Stop thinking about return on ad spend and start thinking about revenue." So Nigel, my dear, can you please expand on this?
Yeah, sure. So essentially how a lot of these platforms work is, it's called, ROAS is an acronym for return on ad spend. So really, you know, strip it back, layman terms, it's just return on investment.
Right.
But the problem is that, let's just give you an example speaking through a customer, because it's easy to understand. Let's say that John is going onto Facebook to socialize with his friends and watch some cat videos. He scrolls across the product, and it's your product, you're a supplement brand. And he thinks, wow, that's a really interesting product that could really, you know, bring me some health benefits in life. But then his phone calls, and it's his mother, and it's his grandma's birthday, so he has to go and get her a present. So now he's off and he's gone. Okay, but remember, he's seen your product now, so he's aware of it. 2 weeks later, he remembers about the product. He goes to Google and he types in your brand, and he goes to your website. And he starts having a look around. He starts, you know, looking at the benefits, some testimonials from other customers. And now he's getting more interest. He's like, yeah, this is definitely going to help change my life. And then he has a really important business meeting out of nowhere. So he has to go, he drops the phone, gets onto his meeting, now he's forgotten. John's quite an interesting guy, so he also uses TikTok. So he's scrolling around on TikTok and he sees another ad from your, you know, supplement brand. And now he finally clicks on, it's a really engaging video. For whatever reason, it gets John's attention. He clicks through to the website. He's hyper aware. He's already decided this is a product that's going to change his life. And he goes and buys not only one, but five products. Now, let's look at the attribution. So if we look at where the customer has come from and we look at single channel attribution, what's going to show us is that TikTok was the one that brought John in as a customer. So smart money would be, let's invest everything back into TikTok. But if we do that, we cut off the discovery channels of where John found us. Mm. And that is why instead of looking at just single channel attribution, the North Star should be what we call marketing efficiency ratio. So it's all of your channels working in silo, and the amount of marketing budget that you spend across the board, and then the total amount of revenue that comes back. And a lot of brands don't understand that. And a lot of them have been trained in this single channel attribution mindset because they're trying to find out how efficient the channel is. But guess what? That's not what the customers do. They hop around because they're all using different platforms. So if you have a strategy that only, you know, splits down these channels one by one, it's not aligned with what your customers are doing. So it's never going to work long term. And that's what the big brands understand and the small ones don't. So yeah, we try, and it's not easy. Like, honestly, there's different tools out there to help you with attribution. And honestly, a lot of it's just smoke and mirrors. We just tend to look at the sales data, the back end of these companies, because that's the real truth. And then we try and get a blended, you know, cost per acquisition that we can have across all the channels. And ultimately, if we're hitting that number, you know, we're moving in line with that North Star. So that's the whole thing around not ROAS and what revenue is, because it's more about the customer and their journey.
It's two things I got from this to summarize. Discovery channel is different from the last channel that your customer interacted with your brand. Hence, you really cannot be so isolated in and obsessed about one channel and leave the rest. So depending on your ICP and where they are shopping, you need to have the system thinking in place and basically feed all these channels. That's right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's really fascinating.
Mm.
Yeah. And if the hot topic of AI, I just want to give the listeners something to think about. So AI is pretty good right now. Okay. It's not amazing. Right? A lot of it's hype. It's not actually that good, but it's going to get good. Okay? So let's fast forward 5 years into the future. Let's say that, and this is scary when I talk about it like this, an AI model, if you give it the right information, can build a landing page, can set up the creative, create all the videos, build a website, and ping out the ads. And literally within 1 hour, you can already be getting customers, and you don't. It will take 5 seconds. But here's the thing: if you don't give it the right inputs, the outputs aren't going to be good. So how, right now, do you get ahead? Well, first-party data capture. So a lot of brands, they don't understand that the real power of paid advertising isn't actually just the customers; it's the data that they're purchasing, because that feedback loop allows you, if you capture the data right, to be able to iterate not only your marketing strategy, but also your product. And in my opinion, in business, probably the most important thing is the feedback loop between your solution to solve the problem that, you know, you're solving in the marketplace and the market feedback. So you can iterate and iterate and then have ultimately the best product. So what, you know, brands really need to, and businesses need to be doing now, even if you're not in direct to consumer, is collecting more first party data. And Let's actually talk about what that looks like. So, for example, surveys are a great one. You know, when you're sending out emails asking for, you know, asking your questions, even if you just hop on a Zoom call with a few customers and ask them specific questions, because they give you all the answers. The problem is most brands aren't capturing that data and they're not storing it in an efficient manner, you know, splitting out into what are the customer's objections? What are the stories that our customers tell us about how the products change their lives? And more importantly, what is the language that the customers in our submarket use? Because if you have all of that, and then suddenly these AI models are capable of doing what I said before, now you can just plug it into the models and it will spit out all of these golden marketing strategies. So the brands that, when AI gets to that point, that are going to be massively ahead are the ones that right now are building out really good first-party data capture systems, and they're training their team, their customer service team. They see them as, you know, the new sales team. It's not just, you know, customer support. It's, wow, they're the people that are going to get the data
right,
that when the technology is good enough, we're going to input into it, and we're going to have a massive competitive advantage and eat up loads of market share.
That's so important. A lot of brands, not in direct to consumer, even to in B2B, reliant on this ad platform data and analytics data, but they don't capture their own data. And basically, that's a huge liability for a business to grow, because the data you are getting is no different than the data that your competitors are getting.
Yep. It's just what you do with it. And to be honest, even now, without AI, the best creatives that we put out into Facebook, for example, when we're making ads to try and, you know, find new customers for these businesses, it's always where we did a lot of customer research. We found the specific language. I'll give you an example. So we work with a skincare brand called Eczema Honey. We did a ton of research on their customer and found out that it was actually mothers that have children who have eczema that were the best customers. Not only they bought the most products, over the course of the lifetime of the business, they bought the most products too, and they spread the message more. So we found creators who were mothers. We built out a story, a script, using the language that we'd seen through the customer research. And we even went a step further. We actually built out a specific landing page we sent the traffic to from the creative that also talked only about mothers, like in the headline, and built on that story all the way through the page. And then we set this ad up on Facebook. And over the course of about 8 weeks, one video did $200,000 in revenue.
I believe
for that business.
I believe it. I see it too. I see it, especially the one thing that we say, it could be a generalization, but let me just generalize. Businesses that are winning, they rely more on their landing pages than their typical e-commerce.
Yeah, because then it's a game of unit economics. So because they're converting more customers, it means that they have more money to spend on acquiring.
And my point here is, like, these businesses that are leveraging landing pages, they know their ICP.
They know
who they are aftering. So they don't want to cater to everyone. They just want to cater to those people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, people talk about CRO landing pages and it all sounds boring and businessy. It's just customer experience. That's all it is. It's basically just because the thing is for you, if you have a problem that needs to be solved and you see an ad and then you go to the landing page and it speaks specifically to your problem, you're basically doing the work for the person. So it's a better customer experience.
100%. So it's a lot. It's a lot. Nigel, I got to bring you back in for this part two. But I want to get your point on another important point for business to grow. A lot of businesses are obsessed in B2B and B2C. They're obsessed with capturing customer, but they don't look at the total contract value or total, I don't know what's the term in the...
Lifetime value, they call it.
Lifetime value.
Yeah.
So what are your strategies not only to bring, so I'm a bit clear about bringing new customers or bringing customers, but how would you get them sold by what brand represent and sort of like suggest them to stay with the brand and increase the basket size?
So you're talking about getting to repeat purchase?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, one easy way is subscriptions. So that's a big one. If you can have, you know, people subscribing and give them a discount, obviously, we know with the SaaS world how well that works. So that's obviously one way. And then I think another one is being smart about the product development. So if, for example, we've got a hero product and, I don't know, we go back to the supplement example and it's, I don't know, let's say it's a greens powder, the next product, if it's not too far off what that product is and it complements it, it means that probably if the manufacturer, it's not that complicated to develop. So it doesn't take that much prototyping and research compared to going off and doing, like, I don't know, a t-shirt or something. And the customer is already in that lifestyle. So it's easier to bring out a new product for that specific person. So I think it's also around the products that you launch. And then obviously that just makes the marketing, whatever you do through, you know, obviously email marketing is a big one. Most companies in e-commerce do about 30% of their revenue through email marketing, even the big ones. So that is a really big component, but you still need the right products in line with the lifestyle of the customer. So honestly, like, I mean, just to say across the board, a lot of great marketing comes down to the products.
Right.
Like, you can't put lipstick on a pig, as the saying goes. Yes. I think it's been strategic, and we can obviously give advice from a marketing standpoint that if we develop this kind of product, it's going to be better. But there's things you can do in terms of subscriptions, and then you can run like retargeting ads for certain demographics that haven't bought the product in a while, and you can run a restock ad and all that kind of stuff. There's, you know, it depends what the business model is, but the other one is community. So, you know, I'll give an example. That product, Eczema Honey, they have a community of 15,000 people in Facebook. Wow. When you go into that community, they're not just talking about products. Those are those mothers. They're talking about everything in life.
Right.
But they associate that with the brand. So when they need a solution, they all buy the products because now they've attached their identity to that brand and they're building friendships, but it's all under the umbrella of this brand. And that's why community is so powerful. So if you can do events and get your people, you know, working with each other, with the rise of the internet and the fact that, you know, it's done great things to the market, it's also become a place of futile comparison and a cesspit almost of where it's really damaging people. People want to meet in person and have that community aspect more than ever. So if you bring people together somehow, whether that's through, you know, a different medium, a different channel, or meeting them ideally face to face, that's where they create a deeper level of trust with your brand. And the other way off the bat, by the way, to do that, I actually was talking to a brand the other day and this one blew me away. So this brand, you know, they had this incredible number on the returning customer rate. And I was really excited. I was like, oh, what they got? They got like a secret marketing tool they're using. There's some sort of secret here. I'm going to find out. And all it was when they sent out the products, the people who pack the products, every single product that goes out, they essentially write a handwritten note and also take a picture of the person who's packing the product, and they send it to those customers. And what has happened as a result of that is those customers are going out onto social media themselves without being asked, and they're posting about this brand and telling all of their friends because they're so touched by it. And I was just like, wow, what an amazing thing to do. What an amazing thing. You know, everyone's talking about all these hacks and attribution tools, and they're just thinking about human to human, how to develop a real relationship. And they've, you know, they've done exceptionally well off it. And now they've got more cash flow so they can invest that back into paid advertising. Because guess what? Every time they buy one customer, they tell five. So now imagine a company that doesn't do that and is trying to compete one-to-one with them. They pay one customer, they get one back. They pay for one customer, they get six. And that is a brand.
Well, I couldn't find a better way of ending this podcast with this. Thank you, Nigel. I really appreciate that you share your personal story. It was very touching. Any last words?
Yeah, actually, there is. So the last part of the story that I didn't share, and I shouldn't be laughing because it's really not funny, is as we hit that milestone of hitting the $100,000 a month, little did my team know that on the inside, I was actually crumbling. And I've been heartbroken by a woman. And this was like the love of my life. And out of nowhere, she turned her back on me. And it led me to a really, really dark place, to the point where I truly hit rock bottom. And I never thought I'd say this, but I actually turned to God. And I started asking him the big questions in life. And from that, it became clear that I was put here, I believe, for a bigger purpose. And using everything that's happened to me and what I've seen in the industry, I essentially, within 24 hours of all of that happening, I handed in my resignation at Alpha Inbound. And I'm going to risk everything to build what we're talking about, a community to guide these brands, these underdog brands, to realize their true potential. And I'm going to build myself from the ground up in public for everyone else to see. And that's my new mission. So the company's name is David to Goliath. And it's going to start out with a newsletter, a podcast. I'm going to document the journey for everyone to see. But yeah, I'm going to build not just a community and newsletter, a movement to help, you know, other entrepreneurs with the right guidance, you know, with the right resources, and just with pure heart, a way where that we can, you know, come together. And again, we can figure out with community that the best way to realize the potential of our businesses.
This is truly a noble mission. And you have my prayers, Nigel. You're a very good human being, and I wish you all the success in your new endeavor.
I appreciate you. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend.
Thank you. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to this episode. For more information, go to bonanza-studios.com.